And now, the tradition continues as WABC presents John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Mike Bloomberg.
Oh, can it be Friday already? It is indeed. That's good news from a lot of levels, and it's good news here because we've got Mayor Michael Bloomberg on the John Gambling Show. Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning. That's a nice thing to say, John. Thank you.
It is. No, it really
is. Yeah, I look forward to it. And, you know, I mean, I even met our other listener the other day.
Did you really?
She said she loved it, actually. She's a big fan of yours and has followed your family's career. But here's the issue. The weather is good. Will it stay good? It's going to stay good for the weekend.
Chilly. Cold, yeah.
But what's coming up?
Thanksgiving.
And
Thursday.
Flu season.
Oh, I hadn't thought of flu season. I'm trying to keep it on the optimistic and the positive.
Well, you know, I can tell you how to make your flu season a little bit less painful, and that is to get a flu shot. Now, you will say, does the city give free flu shots? The answer is yes. Where can I go to get one? Who would you call?
I would call 311 myself.
Absolutely. Not Ghostbusters, but 311 you should call. And there is a place in each of the five boroughs where you can get a flu shot.
Plenty of it. I mean, lots of
Yeah, this year there is enough flu vaccine to go around easily. It only takes a few seconds. It could save your life. It protects you for the whole season. Every year, more than 2,500 New Yorkers die of flu and its complication. It would be great to get that number down. You know, it's not pleasant when you get the flu, coughs and fever and muscle aches and sore throat and contagious. So, you know, be good to have a flu shot and just either your doctor or free of charge from the health
department.
Now,
everybody tells me you get sick. I even have believed that getting a flu shot will get you the flu. But that's not the case.
I think it might be a small risk, but the risk of getting the flu without a flu shot is infinitely greater, or much greater, than the risk of getting it from the flu shot. I get one every year. I've never had a problem. My 97-year-old mother gets one every year.
They say it's benign.
And tomorrow you can get one for free if you call 311.
All right. Well, hopefully everybody will do that.
Because we want you to stay healthy and on the air every day.
We want everybody to stay healthy, as you point out. The biggest problem is it's contagious.
Right. The owner of this radio station wants you working.
He certainly does. At least I hope he does. Speaking of working, in New York City, a lot of people are working.
The best news. This is a reason for everybody to have a smile on their face. The unemployment rate in the city fell to an all-time low. They've been keeping the statistics for something like three decades. It's 4.1%. That is lower than the country as a whole. It's really quite amazing. Remember, New York City is the city that after 9/11, everybody said people were going to leave. Nobody wanted to live here. There was no future. And yet today, the city's credit rating is at an all-time high. Unemployment at an all-time low. Construction permits last year set a record, and this year are running even greater than that. You can look down the numbers. And from independent measures, which is the way you really fairly want to look at it, city's doing well. Now, the biggest problem we still have is that there are a lot of people in the city who have a job, work very hard, but the job doesn't pay enough to feed the family in this day and age.
I was just going to ask you about that, because when I talk about the economy, and the general economy is very hot, very strong, I get people calling in and say, hey, you have no concept of what's going on.
No. The city understands what's going on. One thing is to make sure everybody gets a job. Another thing is to make sure that those jobs pay well. Another thing is to make sure that the workforce has the skills to get the better paying jobs. And we are focusing on what we call the working poor. That was the outgrowth of the study commission that I put together, headed by Dick Parsons and Jeffrey Canada. And we have some programs which we're going to work on over the next year or two to try to get those people's skills up and make their jobs more valuable so that they get paid more. Because it is a problem. But, you know, just because you haven't solved all the problems, there's no reason for us not to be thankful, particularly at this time of the year, for the numbers that are good. We will never have a world where everything is perfect. And, you know, people that always want to find something wrong, I guess will always want to find something wrong. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with finding something right every once in a while, although sometimes you never know it from the news.
But I was just going to say the same thing, especially when it comes to the economy. The economy is ripping, and you listen to the mainstream media, and you think we're going out of business.
Oil price coming down.
What, $55 a barrel yesterday.
Right. That's good news. Price of gasoline's about 22 on average around this area. It was at 3 not that long ago.
3 plus.
I can tell you exactly when it was at 3 plus. It was at 3 plus virtually the day that our city council passed a law, you can't make this up, passed a law that said that gas stations can't change the price of gasoline more than once a day. So they have, in theory anyways, I don't overstate this, they've locked in higher prices for at least a few hours every single day.
Right. Which means you can't change them going down as well as
absolutely.
Going up.
I mean, we always, you know, we tend to pass laws after the fact, and maybe you should have thought about those problems earlier. But nevertheless, I don't mean to take a cheap shot at them. I just think you got to understand the marketplace is going to function. We have the problem this country has is dependency on foreign oil, and it's rich. The price. Everybody blames the oil companies. It's not the oil companies. It's the countries where
producers.
Sure, the oil companies make a lot more money during periods of high prices because they own oil in the ground, but they don't have enough to have any major influence on the price of oil. It's OPEC, which is a cartel put together to manipulate the market and to move monies from us to them. And there's not a lot of
They've been very successful.
They have been phenomenally successful about it, and I think that Congress should be doing something about our dependency on foreign oil. We are not doing anyways near enough to look at alternative fuel sources. Every time somebody wants to put up a windmill farm, somebody says it'll hurt the birds, it'll disrupt my view. You know, off the Connecticut, off the Cape Cod coastline, people wanted to build a wind farm, and some of our elected officials were opposed to that.
How about drilling for more oil off of our coasts?
If you do it responsibly, I have no problems with that. You have to make sure that you have in place the mechanisms to protect the environment. Long term, we would be better off with fuel sources other than burning oil or coal because they pollute, although the technology, in all fairness, is getting better. You know, ethanol has some potential. Nothing wrong with growing corn and making ethanol, but the Congress is keeping out foreign sugar. Because sugar makes ethanol, too, and it makes actually a little
better.
More arguably better. And so, you know, the corn lobby doesn't want that. I have no problems with the corn lobby. Let
nuclear.
Them both. Nuclear. France is going to virtually all nuclear for their electricity generation. I think certainly we should not rule out nuclear plants in this country. They are not the safety hazard that everything else is. I mean, you can always say, well, look, if we don't go and have any, if we all go back to living with a gas lamp or living without energy, we'd be better. There's a great joke, a great cartoon in The New Yorker about 2 or 3 months ago, two cavemen sitting in their caves, and one says to the other, I just don't get it. We breathe clean air. We eat natural foods. We drink clean water, and our life expectancy is 25.
Let's leave it for that. Let me take a break right now. We'll come back to Mayor Michael Bloomberg in just a second. WABC. We continue here with Mayor Michael Bloomberg at 77 WABC. You can't get away from the cell phones in schools.
Sure we can.
Now the kids are sticking them in their bras.
Oh,
you know.
What you can't get away from is the necessity to sell newspapers. That's all that is about. They go out and they gin up a story to have press. But the truth of the matter is the school system is doing spectacularly. You know, we have 80,000 teachers who are doing their job. And every day, everything we do is to try to make their life a little bit easier so they can focus on kids. If they've got to focus on cell phones so that some elected official thinks that they can get a moment of sun in the newspapers, it is an outrage.
How about the buildings of new schools? I saw that you've got some bonds that are going out to help finance that.
The state came through, in all fairness. Remember, we had a $13 billion campaign pledge to build new schools. The city put up $6.5 billion. We asked the state to put up $6.5 billion. If you remember, they were a little bit reticent to do it, and I just suggested that Some of the schools that were in the politically sensitive districts might be the ones that would not get it. It was no pressure. I was not trying to pressure anybody. I don't want that on the record. It just that's the way the numbers worked out. And after that came out, it somehow or other everybody became more amenable and we started talking. And in all fairness, in the end, George Pataki and Shelley Silver and Joe Bruno deserve the credit, along with the members of the other members of the legislature, for coming through with a commitment for 6.5 to match our 6.5. And we had gotten ahead of the game when the six and, when their money hadn't been there for 1 year. We even advanced their money and got ahead on our part of it. Anyways, this is part of that that $13 billion. Some of the monies go on the state's balance sheet. Some of the monies go on the city's balance sheet. The city, however, will pay the debt service on only 6.5 out of the 13. The state will pay 6.5 the debt service on the other 6.5, regardless of whose balance sheet they're on. A little over half the money will build new schools. A little less than half the money will go to rehab existing schools. In this city, the average school is 62, 63 years old.
Old infrastructure.
Yeah, I mean, they just didn't invest for years. When we build a building, and you know, in the business world, you'd amortize it or depreciate it in case of a building over 20 or 30 years, and then you'd have a pot of money, at least an accounting pot, and you'd go and replace the building. City government doesn't keep its books that way. We just assume things will go on forever, and when in tough times, nobody bothers to reinvest. Nobody says we've got to do it. You saw that with the water tunnel, which we desperately need if, God forbid, one of the existing water tunnels collapses. And for years, people in city governments, when tough times came, cut back and said, oh, we don't need it. We'll just pray our ways into a water tunnel or pray that we don't need it. But I've said, no, that's not a rational thing. You've got to make the investment, even if it means we can't do other things that might get you a better photo op and that the public short term might appreciate more. Let's focus on the infrastructure. So we're building schools for the long term. We're rehabbing existing schools for the long term. We're building that water tunnel. It'll get done, actually, in the next decade.
But at the same time, I understand that you have contracted the numbers of school buildings.
Oh, I think it went from 107 to 100. You know, part of that is we've got to look at the costs. Construction costs in this city are going up something between 1% and 2% a month.
I know that.
Steel, cement, there just isn't enough. Workers, I had dinner the other night with the head of one of the trades unions. And
you compound that 1% or 2% a month.
Oh, it's 24% a year, sure. I had dinner the other night with one of the heads of one of the trades unions here in the city. And his members are all fully employed. They are importing people with their trades from out of the city and out of the state because there just aren't enough. Now, that's not true of all of the trades. I don't think electricians are doing as well as plumbers, for example. And, you know, steel workers are doing well, but maybe masonry, I don't know whether. But the bottom line is the construction industry is booming, and so much so that costs are going up. And we're trying to make sure with the monies we have, we get the most bang for the buck. Design, siding, construction materials, you want to build so they last. You want to build so that they're great places for the kids to learn and the teachers to work and teach. The reality is you will never be able to build as much as you'd like. And I think we reduced it from like 107 buildings to 100.
And every school is completely different. You can't use the set of plans from one
you can't
to build
use
the other
because
every site is different.
And siting,
every need is different.
Siting is one of the hardest things. Everybody wants more schools, but you try to put it in somebody's neighborhood and you'll find that they believe there should be more schools elsewhere. It's not quite in their neighborhood. That's one of the more complicated things is to find a neighborhood that a piece of land that you can afford in a neighborhood where it fits. And then you've got to work with the neighbors to make sure they understand the need and make sure that we mitigate the traffic and, you know, the bunch of kids on the sidewalks that, you know, some people aren't happy with.
City Council voted themselves raises this week. There's been some noise about that from various quarters. This is supposed to be a part-time job. Most of them, if not all, have other jobs.
I think 13, if I remember the number, out of 51 have other jobs of significance. A lot of them say they work full-time, even though it's true the city charter does say that it is a part-time job. I was supposed to appoint a commission. I'm supposed to appoint a commission every 4 years to study raises. I didn't for when it was due. I waited 2 or 3 years because the city's finances, I thought, were in big trouble. Finally did. Committee did its work and looked at it very thoughtfully, decided that some officials really did deserve pay raises. The district attorneys, for example, worked very hard. Borough presidents in the city, I thought, were really low paid compared to the amount of work they do. You know, they're cheerleaders for their boroughs, but they're also, they do have some real impact, and some of them are really good.
Well, they steer agenda, don't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, I mean, it's, like, you know, it's one that just all he does is rush to the steps of City Hall to have a press conference, doesn't really do anything. The others really work very hard. And they deserve a raise. And the commission looked at that, and it also recommended a raise for the city council, along with the city council doing some other things. But all I can do is put together the commission, approve their report, send it on, which I did. The city council then has the authority under the charter to change voter law with some parts, not others, whatever they do. They will send me the law, and I will probably sign it.
Is it legit that the city council members get additional pay for chairing committees, and they can?
Is it legit? It is. It depends
on
your.
I mean, legal.
Legal. It is legal. That's what legit means. Do you have another question?
Is it right?
The commission's report that I approved and sent on. Recommended that they get rid of Lulu's.
Sort of a double dipping thing. I mean,
yeah, I mean, I will say that all legislative bodies at the federal, state, and city levels have a similar situation. It is the ways that the head of the legislative body, it's an aid in controlling the members, pulling them all together, getting them to all vote as a block so you don't have chaos. And so it's like anything else. It has its pluses. It has its minuses. The commission recommended no. City council said yes. On to the next.
Okay, on to the next.
I mean, the most important thing, John, is does the city council act responsibly when it comes to passing laws? That's more important. It's not the theatrics are different. You can argue they're overpaid or underpaid or not paid correctly or whatever. But what I'm more concerned about is are they doing the right thing? And I will say Christine Quinn has been, in the year that she's been the speaker, done a good job, I think a spectacular job, at pulling everybody together and passing laws, responsible laws. Sometimes they discuss things and focus on some crazy stuff, but when push comes to shove, it's Christine Quinn's job to pull them all together, and I think she's really done the job there. So I will give her the tools. I'll support giving her the tools that she needs.
Fair enough. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here at 77 WABC. He'll be right back. Let us take our half-hour break. Here's George Webber. George. All right.
77 WABC.
All right, we roll on. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, you and me, John Gambling, here at 77 WABC. Homeless, high on your agenda. They're closing Camp LaGuardia, 1,000 men.
Yeah.
Where will they go?
We have other shelters that have the capacity. The number of homeless men has gone down. Remember, what we'd said at the beginning, Linda Gibbs is really the genius behind this, and now we have a very good commissioner for the Department of Homeless Services. We brought him in from Philadelphia. The homeless, we said we would try to reduce the percentage, the number of homeless by 2/3 before we left office. We're a little bit ahead with men, a little bit behind with families. Each of these has seasonal trends and go up and down, so you can only look at it long term. But we have reduced the number of single homeless people enough by getting them, keeping them from becoming homeless, which is the first thing we're trying to do. We're trying to have a smaller population of homeless by keeping people from becoming homeless and using the monies you save by not having to house them to keep others from becoming homeless. It's much more humane. It also makes good sense economically and good for everybody. The Camp LaGuardia is way upstate in Orange County. It's a schlep for people to visit. It's a schlep for the city to move people up and back. Cost a lot of money. The people up there in Orange County never liked it. They've always said it contributed to crime and other things in the area. It's been around for a long time. Lots of court orders about it, you know, jurisdictional fights and legal fights. Closing it and selling it to Orange County is a very good deal for everybody. Orange County is very happy. The homeless advocate should be very happy. It shows we're making progress. And we will keep people in the existing male shelters here in the city. We still have to keep working on keeping families together and keeping people from becoming homeless. The unemployment rate is good news. That will contribute. Every one of these things contributes a little bit. And, you know, the advocates are never happy because that's their business to always have things to complain about. But the bottom line is Linda is doing a great job as the rest of the people.
Has she indicated to you that the numbers of homeless, which I know are always, you know, fungible because it's hard to get a real handle on it, have they gone down with the employment rate going down?
Oh, yeah, the number of homeless in the city has continued to decline. The families, which are typically a mother and two children on average, is up in the last few months a little bit, but they go up and down all the time. It has to do with weather. There's a big seasonal component. It has to do with the economy. People can or cannot get jobs. There's some factors of just you don't, you know, all of a sudden you get a spike and you can't really put your fingers on why. But we have more and more programs designed to keep people from becoming homeless. And when you talk about homeless on the streets, that's a whole separate thing. Linda started something a few years ago, if you remember, this annual census. And it may not be perfect and it doesn't measure every day, but it does give you a benchmark from year to year of how many people are sleeping on the streets and where they're sleeping. And that's been coming down. And we also, it helps us identify where the people are, and we go out and send out workers to try to work with them.
Always becomes problematic, too, as we get into the colder weather.
Colder weather, once it gets below 32, you can force people to go to shelters. Some people like to live in the streets. Yeah. The trouble is with the homeless, particularly the homeless population that lives on the streets, they tend to have lots of problems, addiction problems, emotional problems. It's not just they don't have a roof over their heads. Families, it tends to be domestic problems and economic problems. It's somewhat different, although some of it's domestic violence that breaks up families. And you know, the world is very complex, and we have a lot of people that need help. And rather than sit around and have press conferences, we try to do something about it, and the results are there. We're going in the right direction.
George Weber in his newscast mentioned that there is a regional push to increase taxes on cigarettes. I think these...
Well, New York City would love that because people... That was go outside of New York City to buy. They were talking about other counties raising their cigarette taxes by $2. We would raise ours by 50%. Then ours would be the same total as theirs. People
so the
wouldn't
price
leave.
Would
this,
be the same.
Price would be the same, and that's the way to do it. The reason to raise cigarette taxes, although I think some of these counties want the money to help balance the budget, but the real reason is higher prices for cigarettes mean fewer kids smoking. Kids don't get addicted. They won't smoke all their lives. Adults tend to be relatively insensitive to the price of cigarettes. Those that are addicted will find a way, no matter what. Children don't have the money, and so all of the evidence shows you raise the price of cigarettes by raising taxes, incidence of number of kids smoking declines.
The what are they?
And just like today, I think it's something like 1 in 10 high school students in New York City says they smoke. And 5 years ago, it was 1 in 4.
I was just going to say it's going down, which is a wonderful thing.
This is one of those things that the economics work textbook faction. Textbook. What's the word I'm looking for?
Like a textbook.
Right, you know, like a textbook. If you raise the price, right, you raise the taxes, smoking goes down.
Slot machines, video slots. What do they tell you? They're at Aqueduct. They're at Yonkers.
Do you know what a video slot is?
Well, it's an ATM machine is what it is for the state.
It is fascinating. There is a state law that prohibits gambling. Okay, there's some exceptions. Lotteries are acceptable if they're the state and the city lotteries, as long as the money goes to education, of course, since money's free.
Video slots are a lottery, right?
Well, I'll get to that in a second. The monies that are designated for education just mean the state and city take other monies away. So it's just adds money to the pie. But because one-armed bandit slot machines are illegal because they're gambling. So there is a kind of device. It looks suspiciously like a slot machine to you and me.
It has lemons, cherries,
has an arm, spits out coins, all that sort of stuff. And but when you put your money in and you pull the lever, it sends a signal out to a computer someplace else. The computer conducts a lottery and decides whether you have won or not. It then sends back a signal and decides whether you get 3 lemons or 3 cherries or some combination thereof, okay? And that makes it a lottery, not a slot machine. You can't write this stuff.
No, you can't, but I've always maintained that these things are nothing more than a tax. Tax put on by whatever government agency happens to be.
Well, some things are clear with slot machines or with gambling. It never helps the surrounding community. You just have to go to Atlantic City to see that. And it generates revenue for the state. Now, there is the argument that it takes that revenue away from the people who can least afford it. There is an argument that if they want to gamble as a form of entertaining, of entertainment, that's fine. And, you know, listen, spend your money going to a movie. Spend your money going on the Ferris wheel at Coney Island. Spend your money at a slot machine if you find it entertaining, as long as you don't spend the rent money. That's the danger, is people that get carried away. Other than that, it's entertainment.
Speaking of spending the rent money, the two states, New York and New Jersey, Connecticut to a certain degree as well, all have budgetary problems. New governors in both places, and both governors, while they were running, never mentioned that things in the banking department were not so good. Eliot Spitzer yesterday said the cupboard is bare here in New York. John Corzine said exactly the same thing when he came in and was elected as well. They want to sell off. They're looking for ways to make ends meet. They're looking to sell off, lease, rent, capital, infrastructure. How do you view that?
Look, it's not for me to criticize anybody else, because New York City
conceptually, but
New York City could consider doing the same things. You have things that the question really is: it is a financial transaction that gives you monies now that you repay over a long period of time. If you're going to use that money to build a new building that you'll use over a long period of time, I think it makes sense from a financial planning point of view. If you're going to use that money to pay wages, for example, today, and have to pay it back over a long period of time, that makes no sense to me. We were in court the other day, and the courts ruled that we'd have plenty of, they didn't rule in our favor, but they didn't rule against us. They ruled that down the road we'll have plenty of time to make the case. There's two health care plans that are merging. It is an outrage. The judge should stop this instantly. It is taking away the city's ability to negotiate a fair price for health care plans in a world where we all know one of the big problems that governments and private sector companies have is how they're going to pay for health care down the road.
The new health care people say, don't worry, we will manage it.
Right. I mean, if we don't have any leverage to negotiate a better deal, this city's taxpayers are going to get so royally taken advantage of. And down the road, people are going to yell and scream and wonder what happened. I can tell you what happened. It's facing us right now. There's a train wreck coming down the road to let these two guys merge. And we will fight this in court very hard. And what they want to do is they want to merge so that then they can...
HIP and GH.
Right. And the only reason to merge is that they can control the marketplace. That's the reason to merge. So they will then be able to rip us off is the only nice ways to phrase it. And then they want to take it public. And then the state legislature will say, oh, we have this pile of money, and they'll spend it in the long term. You know, that's not a great deal for, I don't think.
Did their side have better arguers, better lawyers in the city?
No, the judge said that there's plenty of time to make the case. One of the problems is that the State Banking Commission and the, no, it's not State Banking Commission, which my girlfriend happens to run, the State Insurance Commission, which I met the guy who runs it, nice guy, and the federal government did not chime in on the antitrust issues. I thought that the attorney general should have stepped in. He was, and his staff was interested in doing it at the beginning. I don't know why they didn't in the end, but I think they certainly should join us in this suit. I think it would be an outrage if they did not. This is an anti-competitive thing that will hurt this city going forward. And from a financial planning perspective, to then take it public would be taking a capital asset, selling it, and using the money to balance the budget short term. Not good economics, not good fiscal planning, and something that will hurt us down the road.
All right, before we get to telephones, 1-800-848-WABC, it'll be your turn in just a moment to ask the questions of Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Your reaction to former Mayor Giuliani's looking in, exploring the possibility of forming a committee to run for president?
Rudy was a very good mayor of this city, left the city better than he found it. I've done, from what I understand, a good job with his company, wants to be president, probably be a good president. There are lots of people who want to throw their hats in the ring. Everybody speculates that George Pataki and Hillary Clinton want to do the same thing, so we'd have three people from New York. But there are people from around the country, John McCain and Mitt Romney, the political pundits say want to run, Edwards and Gore, and there are a lot of people that want to run for president. John Kerry, supposedly. I mean, I said yesterday, the more choice the public has, the better. And, if Rudy didn't ask me, but if he did, I'd say if you think that you might want to do it, go for it and see. I'd give the same advice to George Pataki and Hillary Clinton and everybody else. You know, you don't want to sit around and say, I could have and I should have. I'm a big believer in trying things if you want to do it. And if it doesn't work out, at least you'll know. You won't have that second guessing thing that would nag you for the rest of your life. But also, I think the public, the more candidates that run, the better it is for democracy.
All right, it's your turn next. 1-800-848-WABC. When we come back, you ask the question.
Radio 77 WABC.
Here we go. A couple more minutes with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. My name's John Gambling. This is WABC. And it is your turn to ask the questions. 1-800-848-WABC. You want to start with Al down in Edison on line 6?
Sure,
all
absolutely.
Right, Al, you got the mayor. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning.
I'm sorry, it's AJ. My mistake. AJ, go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. I'm a big fan of yours.
Thank you.
Yes, I was wondering, you met with Mr. Spitzer last week. I was wondering, now that Mr. Pataki is leaving, does he still share the same vision as far as the development of Ground Zero?
I think Elliot does, wants to get it done. He and I have talked about it. I think what's going on now is construction with through most of the legal, jurisdictional, siting, design issues. There's still one or two that are important that are out there, but we are getting progress. And the papers in the last few days have been full of pictures of the rebar being put together and cement being poured. So I'm optimistic that things will go on. Larry
Does he
Silverstein.
Share your view for the memorial? And
yeah, I think so. You know, this was picked by a public process, the memorial, and he and I have talked. I saw him in paper quoted as saying he was pleased I was taking on the fundraising, and you know, he's got other things to worry about too. So,
coverage bear.
Yeah, no, but Spitzer lives in the city and understands the city, and downtown is going well, and we'll have a great relationship. He lives three doors away from me. You know, we've been sort of business casual friends for a long time. And I think I had a great relationship with George Pataki. I've always been a supporter, even when lots of people weren't. I think he was criticized unfairly for a lot of things. I would have done some things differently. He would have done some things differently. And I see no reason why we won't have a great relationship with Elliot Spitzer. I think he'll be a good governor.
Okay, AJ, thanks a lot. Where do you want to go next, Mr. Mayor?
I guess why don't we talk about take Maurice in Manhattan.
Maurice, it's your turn. You've got the mayor. Go.
Well, good morning. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm a big supporter. The question I had, what kind of example is the city setting when it pays its city council members more than teachers and law enforcement, such as 50 or cop?
You know, Maurice, I've thought about that, and I've tried to answer that. I think the real answer has to be that the way government and organizations work is you don't always take everybody, put them in a hierarchy of how important they are, or even how much the marketplace demands that they get paid. You can make the case that city council members are underpaid or overpaid. In the grand scheme of things, whichever, remember, there's only 51 of them, and it's not a lot of money in comparison to the other things. What my focus has got to be is, can this city pay the teachers and the cops and the firefighters and all the other 300,000 employees that make this city work? Can we pay them enough so that they can focus on their jobs rather than focus on how they're going to feed their family? And can we continue to attract the best and the brightest from around the country? Because we hire from around the country. Last year we had 70,000 applicants for 5,000 positions in our teaching
core.
What
a turnaround from a couple of years ago.
Okay, but, you know, let's worry about going to the future. We still, you know, there are still some specialties we have trouble recruiting, but we are going in the right direction. And the teachers have gotten a 43% raise over the last 5 years. I wouldn't say they're all happy, but, you know, because everybody wants to make more. But I think generally teachers would say that we have put our money where our mouth is. I said education was the highest priority, and we've done that. But also firefighters and cops and general workers. We have a labor in the city where the unions are working well, sanitation, correction. They're working well with the city together to try to find ways to do more with less so we can pay the people that do work for the city more. That's the objective. That's the ways to have a happy workforce and really produce the services people want.
All right. I don't know. Do we have time for – we only have a really short time left here. I don't think we have time to get another telephone call in before we have to go here.
Well, we can say happy turkey. That was the parade.
Yeah, what are you doing for Thanksgiving? You have family?
I'm going to go to a couple soup kitchens. I'm going to go and watch the parade, do a little bit of radio and television, and then I'm going to have turkey with the family. Absolutely.
It's one of my
favorite meals because people get together, and I also like to go and take a little bit of that skin that's probably laced with stuff that's not good for you and eat the burnt skin and the onions.
The crispy
and the burnt onions, you know, all the grease underneath. That's the best. Oh,
there you
I love
go,
that.
Ladies and gentlemen.
That's why it's always
just
about,
like the rest of
I
us.
I thought about it this morning as I was running. It's the only thing you can do. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, too. Stick around. There's good talk straight ahead.
Opinion.